This is Tom Dotan, and this is The Information's 411. We are deep into summer now, and everything about this one has been unusual. We've still got the virus forcing the total or partial shutdowns of daily life across the country, and businesses and the people who run them are still trying to figure out a way forward. Today's episode, we are looking at two areas, the ad market and deal making. If you remember, a few months back, we were digging into the ad world, which took a big dive in the first few weeks of the pandemic. So now we are in the second quarter, and the terrain is actually shaping up pretty differently for some of the different tech giants. I'm talking to Nick Bastone, who covers Google for us, and he explains why Google is actually taking it harder than Facebook, and why Facebook is likely to recover faster. And yes, we do talk about the ad boycott. In our second segment, I am digging into a fact that everybody across the country already knows: summer camps are canceled. Even summer camps for billionaires, and you really just gotta feel for their parents. So Jessica Lesson, our founder and editor-in-chief, joins to talk about what it means that the annual Allen & Company gathering of media moguls in Sun Valley, which would have happened this week, is off this year. Can deals still happen? Can billionaires still mingle? And most importantly, what do we, the pestering reporting class, do about it? So Jessica and I break it all down. But first, let's talk about ads with Nick. All right, Nick, so a couple of months ago on the podcast, we gave the state of affairs in the ad world at the outset of COVID, and we all weren't very sure what was going to happen. We were seeing declining ad prices on Facebook and Google, and none of this was really reflected in the first quarter, but now the second quarter has finished, and it's probably a good idea to get a sense as to where things ended up. So looking at Facebook and Google, what was your sense on the state of affairs with ads?
April was sort of a rock bottom for digital ads, both on spend and on ad prices. And since April, we spoke to multiple people that said spending and prices have sort of, been consistently rising slowly but consistent from like an April bottom. That's not a huge surprise. I mean, Google's CFO Ruth Porat said, their ads business is tied to broader, economic recovery. And although sort of the state of the economy is pretty confusing right now, there has been a bit of a recovery, and that has been reflected in the ads market as well. Maybe surprisingly, but Facebook seems to have recovered a little bit better than Google, and we can get into that, but that is probably tied to sort of the nature of how their ads business works.
So yeah, let's get into that, Nick. Why would that be the case? I think it's surprising to a lot of people, given that Google is this behemoth in online advertising, only gotten more powerful as the years have gone on, and it's also withstood major economic recessions in the past, like 2008. So why is it that Facebook somehow is emerging a little bit better positioned than Google?
Right. Well, I mean, Google has obviously like an incredible like ads business. It makes most of its money on search ads, although it makes some money on YouTube ads and also on display ads that it helps put across the internet. But it makes most of its money on search ads. And with search ads, advertisers are buying keywords, and those keywords can be super, super valuable, especially on things like travel or lodging or higher ticketed items. When the economy's good, advertisers are paying a lot of money to show up one or two when you're searching for flights to Atlanta. But when the economy's not as good, those can be impacted more. It's a little bit more sort of elastic on the Google side, whereas Facebook, advertisers are bidding on demographics. So they're not necessarily bidding on certain search terms, but they're bidding on, I want my ad to reach this group of people. And your demographic, what you represent, it doesn't go away in a pandemic. So, you have these, more people spending more time on Facebook, and ads are continuing to be served to them. And actually, the type of ads on Facebook that do really well are, what they call like direct response ads. They, you take an action, you go, you see something that you didn't know you even wanted, and you go and buy them. So we've seen this on Facebook where things like I don't know, e-commerce products. I'm getting a lot of ads now as the summer comes along for shorts. I spoke to one person that said, you know, he got an ad for a soccer net for the backyard for his kids that he didn't even know that he wanted, but he went and saw an ad on Facebook and spent $100 on it. So these ads are actually doing pretty well during the pandemic.
We're looking at the very likely possibility that Q2 will end up being the worst quarter in Google's history. I mean, what does that really mean?
There's different estimates out there, but Mark Mahaney from RBC estimated that their ads business would be down 9% in Q2. Again, Ruth Porat sort of alluded to that last quarter, that Q2 was going to be bleak for its ads business. But before that, I think the worst quarter was 2009 in the second quarter, and their ads business was up 3%. So down 9 versus up 3. So it's definitely going to be a rough quarter for Google, but the overall consensus is that this was a trough quarter and that things are looking up. So I think Mahaney had Google's ad business rebounding in Q3 to be up 5%. So kind of back a little bit on track. And then by Q4, he had Google's ad business up 12 to 15%, which is sort of back to the growth that you'd expect year over year.
Last thing I want to ask about is the boycott, the snowballing boycott of Facebook by a lot of brand advertisers. We've talked about it on the podcast before, but just in terms of the bottom line for Facebook and how much, you know, people are expecting this to hurt the company, what's the consensus?
It's something that I think analysts are keeping an eye on. Right now, the number is like close to 1,000 advertisers have temporarily, you know, paused their ad spend on Facebook. But, you know, Facebook is made up of, you know, a huge number of businesses, and most of them are small businesses that rely on Facebook. You know, it's not as easy for a direct-to-consumer company that, you know, some of these companies rely on Facebook or Instagram for 80 to 90% of their revenue, whereas a company like Coke or Unilever, like, you know, social ads are a good way to get the message out, but they're not reliant on these ads.
Right. And there's alternatives for them. Like if you are, if you're, you know, an e-commerce brand, especially a direct-to-consumer one, your business is, you know, getting people, funneling people from Instagram largely and Facebook to your products. And there just isn't anywhere else to go with that. All right, Nick, thanks so much for joining.
Cool. Thanks, Tom.
Now in segment two, we are talking about summer activities for the powerful. All right, Jessica, so yearly tradition for media execs, tech execs, and reporters after 4th of July is to haul yourself over to Idaho, and if you're of the moneyed elite set as an executive, you get to, you know, hang out with your family and go hiking and do big deals. If you're a media reporter, you get to try to follow these people around and, I don't know, try to make some news out of it. But not happening this year. It's the coronavirus. So does that matter at all? Does it matter that the Sun Valley Conference is just not a thing this year?
I don't think we're going to miss a beat because Allen & Company Sun Valley isn't happening this year. You know, it's a great confab and all the big CEOs across tech and media and elsewhere and investors are there. But, you know, I think people probably miss seeing each other, but are happy to kind of to sit it out, in part because I think the kind of activity that goes on there can still happen in other ways. So yes, we'll miss hiding out in the bushes, trying to ask media moguls questions, as you and I have done many times. But I don't think the industry is much for the worse because of it.
And actually, I mean, on that point, I feel like in the past few years, we and others have kind of raised this question of, does this conference matter? I mean, it probably had its heyday in the late 90s when all the major media consolidation would begin to happen and tech too. Do you think, you know, it not mattering much this year kind of confirms that fact that things are starting to wane in importance as far as the conference goes?
Well, I think, you know, the part of the conference that's always been very significant is the deal making. And that's everything from major mergers happening to companies and partners like Google and Facebook and Apple, you know, kind of their CEOs sitting down and kind of going through their laundry list of gripes they have with each other or things that they want to do together. And so I think that is important and, you know, maybe particularly now in a sense that the big four tech companies are up against multiple antitrust investigations around the globe. It's not something they appear to really be collaborating on, but, you know, perhaps they have some common interests and could work together in some ways. So, you know, at the same time, I think we've seen things like traditional media and big media companies consolidate, but I think there are plenty of other types of deals that are going to happen, whether it's more consolidation in enterprise software or even, you know, smaller companies that have hit some roadblocks during COVID. Maybe that IPO isn't going to happen, but, you know, still great companies that are all of a sudden acquisition targets that weren't before. You know, I was talking to a senior person in the tech industry yesterday who said he had gone on his first socially distanced walk with a, you know, potential sort of business partner. And so, you know, I think there's the itch to start doing things, particularly for these big deals. You know, Zoom only gets you so far. But I think it, in part because of COVID, but perhaps also just where certain parts of the tech and media landscape are right now, I think we're on the cusp of seeing a lot of deal activity. Indeed, in recent weeks, we have, you know, with Uber buying Postmates, Grubhub selling to Just Eats. We've seen tremendous investment, something we at The Information have written a ton about, or in Jio, you know, a very interesting Indian telecom tech and media player. I think things are definitely heating up, and I feel that sort of pent-up itch to do deals as well.
You know, but some of these deals are in the billion-dollar range. I mean, Uber, Postmates was, I think, $2 billion more. But the major media consolidations have already largely taken place, I want to say. I mean, do you think that at least reduces the sheen of this kind of major confab that, you know, I don't know the name specifically of deals, maybe you do, that kind of were birthed out of Sun Valley. I guess famously Disney, you know, Cap Cities, ABC, that one happened. But, you know, are there enough major deals to happen to sort of warrant this kind of a gathering?
Google, Facebook, you know, these are maturing companies in some way. You know, they have to continue to make moves to grow. And while that's harder with antitrust scrutiny globally, I don't think the companies want to kind of feel complacent about it either. So I think you're right. It's definitely a in-between period. You know, it does feel like, especially in media land with, you know, Time Warner, CBS, Viacom, I mean, just what happened to Fox and Disney. I mean, that has played out. But I think it opens up something else, you know, because is Disney in the market for a tech acquisition? You know, we know Bob Iger said in his book they got very, very close to buying Twitter. What's the fate of Twitter? Is Twitter going to stay an independent company? Snap, you know, I get excited about this stuff because it's my job and I love it, but...
Well, they get excited too. I mean, like, that's, you know, that's the nature of companies these days is that, you know, their growth happens through acquisitions. The one thing that we didn't kind of discuss here, and it sort of reminds me of, you know, the two times that I've gone, one was 2016, the other one was 2017. And, you know, I remember 2016, everyone was just laughing about the prospect of, you know, Trump potentially being president. 2017, everyone was excited because Ivanka showed up, which really puts you back into 2017 mindset. So here we are again, like during a presidential year, election year, and it's an off year. So we'll sort of come back potentially with a new administration. Politically, what are you thinking about? I mean, is that something that is going to factor into a big way in how these companies sort of view their ability to make major deals?
In some cases, for sure. I mean, it's no secret that a kind of Biden administration has said it was going to be tougher on tech and look at big acquisitions and specifically the issue there is specifically more the immunity around Section 230. But I think the tech companies see a very different landscape, just in terms of overall scrutiny, which extends into antitrust, you know, between a Trump administration or a Biden administration. I think the antitrust train is moving regardless. You know, we and others have reported that the DOJ is expected to, you know, have something big to say about Google, you know, end of summer or fall, that their investigation is progressing. The FTC investigation of Facebook is moving along. The DOJ has been also poking into Facebook. So I think when you really talk to the heads of these big companies, they kind of they see it a little bit either way. But, you know, they it is a very different environment for them with a very different administration. And I think, you know, in many sense, they're just kind of waiting to see how that plays out like the rest of us.
Yeah. And the last thing that sort of comes to mind, you know, about all this is I always felt, although this is a private conference, it also is one that produces a huge number of images. You know, the press sort of photographers go are allowed to kind of take pictures. And I just know that the executives really take pride in the fact that, you know, they were photographed at the Sun Valley conference next to whatever executive looking like powerful captains of industry. I wonder if part of it, you know, the fact that it didn't happen this year does matter just from the fact that they want to show that American business is strong again. And it's one way to prove that is, you know, showing all of these extremely wealthy execs kind of hobnobbing together and you know, controlling the universe. And I just wonder, you know, psychically how much that affects them, too.
An excellent point I honestly hadn't thought much about, but you're right, Tom. I mean, they banish the reporters, but they want the photographers up close. If you're actually walking the grounds at Sun Valley, they want the photographers to see the action, which, I mean, is precisely because what you said. Yeah, perhaps. So maybe instead, you know, we see, you know, these executives take to CNBC a little bit more. You know, maybe it to the extent that being seen at Sun Valley was part of a communication strategy, are they going to ramp up television appearances and the like? Perhaps. I think that's a good point. There's a sort of showmanship aspect to it.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, hope that next year we can all be hanging out down in the duck pond and eating breakfast at the Conditori and, you know, back to the paparazzi-like business reporting nature that is Sun Valley.
Undoubtedly. We'll be there.
All right. Thanks, Jessica.
Thanks, Tom.
That's our show. Thank you so much for listening. And of course, to Nick Bastone, Jessica Lesson, and our producer, Ariella Markowitz. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you back here next time.